From the very beginning, Unitarians have always agreed on one thing. We were Unitarians, not Trinitarians. Unity, singularity, oneness have ever been the basis of who we are. Our one claim to fame, our religious bedrock, was this: Unitarian, one God at most. A Unitarian historian, Earl Morris Wilbur, in his History of Unitarianism, claims that it was never the intent of the Unitarian movement to substitute one set of dogmas for another. In fact, both Unitarianism and Universalism have religiously avoided any statements which could be construed as creeds or dogma or tests of faith. Over the years, however, both have written statements of belief, from the early Universalist Winchester profession in the 1700s, through the Unitarians' things commonly believed among us in the mid-1800s, up to our present principles and purposes. And many lovely affirmations have been used and discarded. When I was a child, many Unitarian churches recited the affirmation, "We believe in the fatherhood of God, the leadership of Jesus, and the brotherhood of man." That's been long gone for many good reasons, along with other attempts to succinctly state what it is that we are about. So I've been looking over some of these old affirmations, and I found it interesting that whenever someone tried to put our religion into some easily remembered and simple form, it always came out as a triad, a trinity. It's though, having abandoned the belief in the Holy Trinity of most Christian churches, we had to invent and reinvent trinities of our own. So let me give you a few examples. The early Universalists took their trinity from the Bible, from Corinthians, and professed to believe in faith, hope, and charity. And the greatest of these is charity. Universalists were a liberal Christian sect with a strong belief in God and the Bible, and faith was an important tenet in their religion. They believed that a God worth believing in would not condemn humans to eternal punishment, but rather would save everyone. Universal salvation, hence the name. And that all should have faith that this was so. This freed them to stop worrying about salvation and to get on with life in the here and now. They had great hope for humanity. "Give people hell, not hope," said the first Universalist minister in America, John Murray. Universalists believed that things would only get better, and there was great hope for the future. But for all of their faith and hope, they did not expect God to do it all. So they practiced charity to assure that a better day would come. Now, consistent with their idea that everyone should work for the greater good, and it was life here on earth that was important, Universalists became very involved in the social gospel and in justice, and they worked hard. Much harder than the Unitarians, who were more concerned with individual freedom. They worked hard to improve the human condition. And so they became active in the abolitionist movement, and they worked for suffrage and temperance and many other things. And in the latter part of the 19th century, they adopted a new trinity, or a call to arms: temperance, justice, and wisdom. Temperance meant not only restraint from drinking, but moderation in all aspects of life, a notion we could probably well adopt again in these days of extremes and excesses. Justice spoke to their long commitment to a new and improved social order, coming out of their involvement in abolition, but broadening into other areas where justice was needed. And wisdom. Wisdom meant not only using one's own mind to determine what was real and believable, and important, but to draw from the collective knowledge and experience of people throughout the ages. Universalists had other basic ideals, but the main Universalist tenets were found in these two trinities: faith, hope, and charity; temperance, justice, and wisdom. Now, of course, we're all aware that many of the founders of our nation, including the drafters of the Declaration of Independence, were Unitarians, one Universalist. So it is no surprise that one of the first affirmations of Unitarianism was that sacred trinity, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But these tenets soon had competition. Charles Eliot, the president of Harvard University and a Unitarian minister, suggested a less political, more religious-sounding statement, which was liberty, truth, and beauty. This was what Unitarians should strive for: a search for liberty, truth, and beauty in their own lives and in the life of the nation. It was William Ellery Channing and Ralph Waldo Emerson who first suggested reason, freedom, reason, and tolerance as underlying religious principles. And it is these three that Earl Morris Wilbur suggests have been the enduring characteristics of Unitarianism. Wilbur says that freedom, reason, and tolerance are instrumental values, tools, guides, skeletal strength, which underlie our practice of religion. But for all of their endurance as underlying principles, many people feel it's time to take a close look at those concepts to see how well they fit today. Throughout our history, our heroes have fought for freedom. Michael Servetus and Francis David gave their lives for freedom from physical and mental tyranny. Channing and Emerson struggled to be free from a psychically disfiguring Calvinism. And we have long held that perhaps the most basic precept of Unitarianism was freedom of belief, that individuals could formulate their own beliefs based on what made sense to them. It would be very hard to give up freedom as a foundation of our faith. The trouble is that now we sometimes seem to confuse freedom of thought with license in behavior. We have insisted on absolute freedom of the individual with too little regard for the impact on society when everyone can translate the ideal of freedom of belief into a notion that also means we are free to act and believe in any way we wish. Now, some say, oh, you Unitarian Universalists, you can believe whatever you want. We even say that. We believe whatever we want, right? No, I think it's the other way around. It's the fundamentalists who believe what they want, because you would really have to want to believe some of the nonsensical things that they do. We believe what we feel we must because our religion needs to be rational. It needs to make sense to us. Emerson had confidence in the trustworthiness of human nature because he believed in an oversoul or conscience which guided it. He would be shocked at the me generation that puts personal desires before the greater good and sees freedom as an end rather than as a means to enable us to work for that which will benefit the whole. Humanity and the universe. Freedom is not something which releases us from the interdependent web of existence and allows us to go merrily off on our own direction, oblivious to how our actions affect others. No, freedom is what we need in order to be able to contribute to a world of peace, justice, and love. Another good trinity. Unless we can recapture that meaning of freedom, the concept of freedom is in serious question as a fundamental religious principle. Similarly, the word reason has taken on a different meaning than Channing and Emerson had in mind. they did not see reason as only left-brain linear thinking and conclusions that must be supported by empirical evidence. No, to them, reason was using the whole of our abilities, the heart as well as the head, to come to the understandings that would serve us best. They saw it more as collective wisdom rather than nitpicking deconstruction. They would include experience and feelings and emotions and intuition as ways to decide if something were reasonable or not. And in their day, the word tolerance was also a very fine word. It conveyed much more than the sufferance and forbearance, the mere toleration, which the word now conveys. It meant that the truth was much larger than one mind could grasp, and that any human is inevitably prone to error. It affirmed that we could not judge others until we fully understood them, and we could not understand them until we had listened deeply and walked in their shoes. Tolerance was the deepest form of love, a human heart so open that it could look beyond the separations that divide us and embrace all others in the oneness as a human community. On the other hand, some Unitarian Universalists today feel that we've been too tolerant, that we put up too much with some of the more radical beliefs which are harmful to the common good. There's a feeling that we should be more active in calling out and countering such beliefs. Not all beliefs are acceptable, no matter how sincerely felt they are. In the late 1800s, Jenkin Lloyd Jones was field secretary of the Western Unitarian Conference, and a group of dedicated ministers, many of them women, were spreading the liberal word throughout the Midwest. And they formed many churches in the name of Truth, Righteousness, and Love, dubbed the Holy Trinity of Western Unitarianism. These three words captured the basic principles of their religion, envisioned as being broader and more advanced than the elitist Unitarianism of the East. The truth can liberate us all. A righteous life would enable us to become the best that we can be, and love is what binds us all together. What more could a religion need? If truth was the foundation of liberal religion, righteousness was its expression, and love its heart. But if truth, righteousness, and love were the principles of Western Unitarianism, its purposes were freedom, fellowship, and character. It was these principles and purposes that defined religion for my ancestors, who started a Unitarian church in Cherokee, Iowa, and for me growing up in Unitarian churches throughout the Midwest. I have always preferred them, frankly, to freedom, reason, and tolerance. But lately, I've come to realize that even truth, righteousness, and love, however noble and inspiring they might be as religious tenets, also have potential pitfalls. When pursued rigorously, truth and righteousness have a way of turning back on one. It can become easy to believe that the truth one has found is the only truth. And this can lead to the kind of thinking which we now see in the religious right, that what they know to be truth is absolute, and any other version of truth is evil. Similarly, living righteously can seduce one into feeling self-righteous. And again, there's nothing more wrathful than a religious belief that only those who follow one specific path are righteous, and all others are evil. And even love can become a duty, rather than a genuine experiencing of human community. And of course, there's always the danger that we can become too much in love with ourselves. And don't we all struggle with these precepts? I know I do. I've been on my search for truth for so long that I am impatient to make use of all my knowledge and experience, which sometimes means that I expect others to see things the same way I do and to trust my version of truth. I've been known to judge others against my definition of truth and to suffer fools badly, not gladly. And sometimes I can become filled with self-righteousness, not without justification, of course. I am prone to err on the side of action rather than caution. When something is to me obviously right or definitely needs to be done, then I want others to see that and to share my views of sense of urgency. And when that doesn't happen, I can turn critical and speak the truth in love. At least I know it's in love, for I wouldn't bother to criticize someone I didn't care deeply about. There are also some potential problems with the idea of organizing churches around the purposes of freedom, fellowship, and character, as the Western Unitarian Conference did. As we've already seen, freedom, undisciplined and unbridled, can lead to license. There needs to be a balance between individual freedom and the needs of the people as a whole. It seems that freedom, without some powerful corrective, can become destructive. So then what about character? Isn't character the logical corrective to freedom run amok? Isn't it character or conscience that reins in freedom and keeps us in line doing the right thing? Well, maybe. Certainly that's what earlier generations of Unitarians thought. But again, words have taken on different meanings in recent times. Some Unitarian ministers will tell you that character is interpreted by some of their parishioners to mean that they should act strangely, appear weird, and generally be characters. Somehow, the word character has lost its positive emphasis and is now a more pejorative term. Well, at least fellowship. Certainly, many of our congregations were specifically organized as fellowships, and many retain that identity. Of course, now we cannot use the word fellows because it's sexist. But aside from that, the ideal of fellowship, being together with or sharing common interests and values with others, has also gained some negative overtones. For fellowship can mean exclusiveness, that one only congregates with people with whom one feels comfortable, people who look and think and act and live like you. And it is true that some of our small fellowships want to remain small and close-knit with everyone fitting in because they are so similar. We usually call it like-minded. Now, this is not all bad, for we need places where we can feel safe and can explore ideas with others who do think, basically, like us. But it can also make us appear elitist, racist, and other less honorable things. There's a dilemma. How open can and should we be and still maintain our unique identity and continue to feel that we belong here, that it is our place, that it meets our needs? Arvid Straub, a minister in Durham, North Carolina, thinks that because these foundations of Unitarian Universalism have come to be misinterpreted, we should adopt a new trinity. He suggests commitment, wisdom, and love. He's not alone in suggesting new triads. Reverend Tony Larson of Racine, Parson Larson as we all know him, says our guiding principle should be love, loving our neighbors as ourselves, openness, keeping an open mind and heart, and service, making the world a better place. Notice how our trinities have been changing over time from statements of belief to ways of being. Now, Edward Cahill suggests that every congregation needs to discuss and develop its own fundamental tenets. If it is true, as Cahill suggests, that not only should each church and fellowship redefine itself, but that it is happening, intentionally or not, throughout the association, then what will hold us all together as you use? All of the trinities that I've talked about so far had one basic effect, and that was to give individual churches something to organize around, something to lift up as a kind of a collective belief system, something to hold us all together in a religious association. What holds us together now? Jeffrey Stokes, in an article entitled Unitarian We Stand, says that intentionally or not, we have forsaken freedom, reason, and tolerance and replaced them with interdependence, community, and spirituality. Now, he's not advocating these, but rather he's observing that they better describe what we are doing and talking about in Unitarian Universalist churches today. He reported that at a meeting in the New England UUs about 10 years ago, we took the three great denominational watchwords, freedom, reason, and tolerance, and agreed that these were no longer the hallmarks of our religion. They were gradually being replaced by another three, interdependence, community, and spirituality. Now, I can see where Stokes would get this idea. We talk a great deal these days about spirituality, but it has the problem that everybody defines it differently, and so it does not serve well as a common tenet. It's not something we can together believe in or use as a basis for our actions. Many use it in opposition to the old reason or the search for truth, but it is often too individualistic and ethereal to serve that function. As for interdependence, I kind of like it. More and more, we are realizing that only is no man an island, but we are all so connected, our lives are so interwoven, and we are so intrinsically joined with nature and the cosmos, that if we do not learn to live interdependently, we shall all perish. Perhaps this is the corrective needed to the old freedom, which generally meant individual freedom, not related to the needs of the whole. And community. Yes, I think it might be more inclusive and open than fellowship. It certainly has a nicer ring than tolerance, which has come to mean toleration or merely abiding or putting up with those we don't like or who are different. Community seems to fit with interdependence and sounds warmer and friendlier and more united. Or maybe we should just stop trying to come up with a trinity who defines who we are. We could just take the best meaning from all of the various triads that have been used over the years as we continue to evolve our own. So take your choice. Faith, hope, and charity, liberty, truth, and beauty, temperance, justice, and wisdom, freedom, reason, and tolerance, truth, righteousness, and love, freedom, fellowship, and character, love, openness, and service, commitment, wisdom, and love, interdependence, community, and spirituality, or something else. Think about it. What three words would you choose to tell people what Unitarian Universalism stands for? Maybe love, community, and caring, or commitment, compassion, and connections, or justice, peace, and service. Just think how much fun you can have trying to define what it is that we stand for and what could bind us together as Unitarian Universalists across the country. Or maybe we should just string them all together and add or subtract words as they seem outdated. Perhaps we could find one word that would describe us like the original Unitarian did. That would certainly make things simple. So when we're asked, what is it that you use believe? We could give a direct answer. What word would you choose?